My name is Colleen Arsenault, and I work at the Washington State Department of Health. I am the Healthy Eating Coordinator there, and I am going to walk through kind of the implementation of this executive order and what we've done. You will notice a few of my slides actually are very similar to Vic's, and we have done this presentation together and probably went back to a resource, the same slide deck. So I will not repeat his words to you, but they are obviously were important points that both of us thought were good to share. I have no relationships to disclose. And I will go ahead and walk you through. I will give an overview of the executive order, really the details that are in it. And then I'll describe to you all how we developed the process we went through developing our guidelines and then what we are doing right now to implement them. We did a bit of formative research to kind of provide kind of a guide for what we put into our implementation guide, and then I'll give you an update of where we are in the progress of the process right now. This slide, you've seen it, so I will not go into details, but on October 31st, our governor did sign an executive order, 1306, and again, it says these details I'll go into, but by July 1st of this year, agencies were to have adopted food and beverage service policies and begin the implementation. The begin the implementation part is important. They have a pretty lengthy timeline to do that, and I'll give you those details in a moment. I will not emphasize the importance of the public-private partnership for y'all right now because Vic did that very well a few minutes ago. But I'll start with our role at the Department of Health. One was to develop nutrition guidelines or to adapt nutrition guidelines, to bring together a work group to do this work, so it is kind of our public-private partnership work group. And then from that work group, and it's written into the executive order, is to develop an implementation guide. I think the work group really kind of recognized and brought up the need to do that, so we worked on that. And then to provide technical assistance to the agencies as they go through this process. This is kind of foreign to a lot of them, and so we're here to provide them with help. And we're also evaluating this work. I think a lot of folks, you know, want to see what it really looks like and kind of the number of the research behind it, so we are working on that as well. So our food procurement work group, the membership, we really did bring together a number of state agencies, local and regional kind of public health departments, and our different advocates. The state government, our executive order applies to institutions as well as for employees, so those that are in the custodial care of the government. So that includes corrections and our Department of Social and Health Services and some of their hospitals and other facilities. So we've got both of those partners, as well as services for the blind. Vic talked about that. Department of Enterprise Services, they hold our food, our umbrella food contract. So we wanted to have them at the table. And also Washington State University Extension, they do a lot of work out in the communities and really nutrition-related work, and they kind of have that health education piece, but also a good perspective on the work, so we involve them. And then some of our local and county public health department partners, Public Health Seattle and King County, they had already developed vending guidelines, so we thought it was really important to include them with that. Spokane Regional Health District and a few of our other health districts were members of this work group as well. And then our advocates. Vic was there for the Childhood Obesity Prevention Coalition, but we also had someone from the American Heart Association who was also a very strong advocate and helped kind of get this executive order to where it was. The first kind of bit of work that our work group was tasked with was developing guidelines. We based them on the USDA's dietary guidelines. A lot of things came up of what is our definition of healthy. I think, you know, this kind of there's a lot of different definitions, and most of our funding is federal funding, and so we really went with the USDA's dietary guidelines, and that's how we define healthy. We really went through a process of reviewing other guidelines that were out there. So the federal GSA guidelines, we looked at those. Seattle King County Public Health's vending guidelines, we used those. In fact, we almost used those to the key, we adapted them a little. And then we also looked at RAND Corporation. They developed some standards for restaurants. And since we were dealing with cafeterias, we were kind of struggling with how to write that. And we really, those were a good basis that we looked at as well. And then we adapted them. This was a very slow process. We started in July of 2012, and I believe we finished the guidelines at the end of December 2013. So, I mean, it was a year and a half process. And I think when you have that many stakeholders at the table, it can take a long time. You have to listen to what everyone's kind of concerns are, especially when we're thinking of corrections in DSHS. You know, the 20% healthy food costs 20% more. That came from one of our sister agencies, and I mean that was a true concern of theirs. So having them involved in the process, we, you know, really kind of had to take our time and hear what they had to say, as well as services for the blind. That was a key, having them there. So we adapted our guidelines. It was slow, but it did happen. And so some of the challenges that I mentioned, services for the blind, also accommodating food service operations, which are operated by small businesses. In our state agencies, our cafeterias are not run by large food management organizations. It is the visually impaired vending or cafeteria operators, cafe operators that do the work. And so we didn't feel that guidelines that had a lot of nutritional data, you know, you need to meet X number of sodium milligrams. We just didn't feel that that was applicable to our stakeholders. So we really developed food-based guidelines rather than nutrient-based. And then the format for the cafeteria guidelines. So how could we do this that would engage the cafeteria owner operator and make them feel like they have a choice in this, that this isn't something that's coming down and being mandated? So I'll go into what those guidelines look like in a minute, but that was took us a long time. And then sodium. Sodium is a hard one. It's difficult to do. It takes a lot of time, and food service organizations, they need assistance lowering sodium. And so actually when I first started this, I was like, we're not going to touch sodium. I don't want to do it. It's too hard. We don't have the resources to do it. But we were able to receive additional funding from the CDC, and we're one of their sodium reduction in communities grantees. And that really provided us with the additional resources to really emphasize sodium in our guidelines. And then really maintaining focus on guideline development and not implementation. Because you have diverse people at the table, you know, kind of our conversations would go from, you know, what the guideline itself would look like to, oh, well, how are we going to do this, and how are we going to do this? And it, so finally we had to say, okay, we're going to have an implementation guide, because obviously we need to help with the how to do this rather than what just the guidelines looked like. So that was a year and a half process. And the guiding principles for our guidelines really do mirror kind of what the USDA's Dietary Guidelines for Americans. It's to emphasize fruits, vegetables, and whole grains, minimize processed foods, to use healthy cooking techniques, so broiling, sautéing, grilling, serve smaller portions of high-calorie items. We're not going to take away people's choice. We just want to make sure there is also the choice for healthy foods. So if you're going to have a cookie, we'd rather it be a 2-inch size cookie rather than 5 or 6 inches. You know, I often call them the cookies that are the size of my face. We want it, so we've asked people to make portion sizes smaller, and then really over time work to reduce overall sodium content. Our guidelines apply to all foods and beverages that are available in vending, meetings and events, cafeterias, cafe, and other on-site retail establishments, and then institutions. So that's prisons and other sites with custodial populations. For vending, we decided to start with 50% of our machine to be healthy. That's a lot of the conversation with services for the blind. That's somewhere they actually really didn't feel comfortable with, but that's kind of where we were able to nudge them to starting. And then we have, like many of the vending guidelines out there, three kind of levels. We have the healthiest, healthier, and limited options, kind of red light, green light. But our stakeholders did not want the red light, green light. They really kind of wanted us to have, they don't like red. Some of the vending folks don't want red, saying this is really bad. Even though we might believe it, we just said eat that in limited proportions. So we have also discussed with services for the blind that 50% mark, after a year or so, once the guidelines are fully implemented in our vending machines, that we'll go back and look at how it's going. If it's going really well, we're going to try and push it up higher, maybe go to 75% healthy in the machine. If it's not going well, I'll try and keep it at 50%, but that I did, you know, I'm open to a conversation or how we'll kind of move forward with that. For meetings and events, this is, you know, kind of serve, you know, healthier beverages. Make sure you always have fruit, vegetables, and water available. Make sure foods are appropriate for attendees' cultural and dietary needs. We didn't do much the State Department of Health, we already had meeting guidelines. We just strengthened those a little, kind of changed them a little bit. But really, just emphasizing again, this is where the smaller portions also come into play. I recently was meeting with a vendor, and he said he's had a lot of requests for 2-inch size brownies. So I was happy to hear that. And also, you know, the smaller muffins and smaller bagels. So somebody's doing it. We don't serve a lot of food at the Department of Health in meetings, so I haven't really been able to see kind of those changes take place. But apparently in other agencies, it is happening. So in cafeterias and on-site retail, this is kind of the basic criteria that all of these locations have to offer. So whole grains, fruits and vegetables, lean proteins, kind of what you would normally think. But what we struggled with cafeterias and cafes is we have different sizes. We have, at one of our buildings, there is a very large cafeteria where there's multiple stations. You can get a hot entree, you can get deli, you can get pizza, you can get a salad bar. But then this same individual, he also operates a small little coffee stand. So how are we going to write guidelines that he can use at both places, but one, he only has a refrigerator where he has grab-and-go items? So depending on the size of the establishment, it's either a large, a medium, or a small food service venue, and they have a different number of points that they have to meet. So everyone has to serve these things here that you see on the screen, but then depending on the size of your food service venue, they get to choose additional options. So that gives them the choice, too. We felt that would empower them to decide how they could do this, and since they are the business owner, we're not, you know, we're public health, we felt, you know, they could make decisions that were best for their establishment. And for institutions, this is a summary of the foods and beverages, standards for meals that are required. It's at least 2 cups of fruits and 2.5 cups of vegetables daily, approximately 6 ounces of grains, 50% of which should be whole grain, and 5.5 ounces of proteins, ideally lean proteins. There is some irony in what's working with the institutions in Washington State, at least our correctional institutions, because as we were writing these guidelines, they went from cooking in each of their facilities to cooking in a centralized facility and shipping it out. And so while they do have the fruits and vegetables, we've really struggling with sodium numbers for them, because when you kind of produce it in a central facility and then you have to preserve it, there's going to be high sodium. So we're working with them on those numbers. As I mentioned, for the implementation, our work group really felt that a guide, they needed some additional stuff then besides the guidelines to really assist going through this. And we didn't really know what that looked like. A lot of things were thrown out in that year and a half that we developed the guidelines of, that kind of was my parking lot when people would get off topic. I was like, oh, we'll just put that in the implementation guide. So when I really looked at everything I had said we would put in the implementation guide, there was way too much there. So we decided to assess our target audiences. We did this at 3 levels. We worked with the adopters, the implementers, and the consumers. We conducted focus groups, key informant interviews, survey, audience testing, and I'll go through what those results were, key findings. So adopters, when we talk about adopters, those are really, that's the leadership of the state agencies. So that is someone who's writing the policy and their leadership. What we found is agencies were already promoting health and wellness a lot. And so what we were going to do needed to build upon their current efforts and recognize their current efforts. Our vending machines were already at 35% healthy of some guidelines that aren't quite as strict as ours. So recognize that this is just another stepping stone. Some of the cafeterias were already serving heart-healthy food. So recognize that you're already doing this, so it shouldn't be that difficult. And then most agencies were already adopting our Energize Your Meetings guidelines. So the process for adopting new policies differs by agencies. I mean, this executive order is over 39 executive agencies, but some of those agencies are actually boards or commissions that have 2 or 3 employees. So the process of adopting a policy for one of those boards or commissions is a lot different than what happens within the Department of Health. They don't have a whole, section of an office that's dedicated to writing policies. So if we are to provide guidance on how to do this, really kind of take that into consideration. Agencies obviously did anticipate that they were going to face barriers. The bandwidth, the time, resources, or staff that's needed to do this work was going to be, costly. It could be costly as well, and it could also... concern about profitability and taking away choice. Again, this goes back to choice. And if you see on the bottom, our logo, choose well, live well, your health, your food, your choice. We really wanted to emphasize we're giving people back the choice. There's a lot of us that don't go to the vending machines because we don't feel we have a choice in there because there aren't healthy options. So we emphasize that. And then finally, that agencies can be motivated to adopt guidelines if labor is on board. So that actually, a lot of the work with our unions happened as the executive order was being worked on in the governor's office. Our governor, and I don't know if even Vic was involved in some of this, but those conversations took place, and I didn't have to do a lot of that. When it came down to our level at the Department of Health, when we adopted our policy, I did go to a meeting with our union to really discuss it. But that was important, that labor had been talked with. That the process be collaborative, that we work with state agencies on this, and that we use an evidence-based support approach. We don't quite have in this work, there's not an evidence base. I think we're all creating it as we go. This is pretty new work. But using, kind of the lessons learned and success stories from other locations. And using a message that's values-based and that DOH, that we provide support and recognition to agencies as they do this work. The implementers, the implementers include the cafeteria and vending operators. We held a focus group with a lot of the vending operators, Coke, Dr. Pepper, Canteen, some of our larger vending companies. Also wellness coordinators and institutional food service providers. In the vending industry, they already see this trend happening. This wasn't news to them. In fact, some of them are already doing this work. But there are also perceived barriers to successful implementation, so profitability, product availability, customer satisfaction. If you take away, I thought it was going to be people's Snickers bars, but we heard a lot from people about not, they want their Cheetos, so making sure that those are still there. That vending, when people go to vending machines, they want pleasure food. You know, that's what they're looking for. So that's kind of something to think about when you're working on this. Pleasure food is one of the vending industry's terms, by the way. That's not mine. And also consumer demand. So what do the consumers want? Promotion and marketing are essential. Create new customers, engage consumers. And one thing that our implementers said, though, is that our guidelines are feasible to implement. They weren't too difficult. And our timeline, I think I missed that slide, but they have 2.5 years to implement this. And some people think that's too long, but the reality is in some places it will take that long. And the consumers, we sent out a survey to state employees. We had over 7,200 employees respond to this. I don't know the response rate because we don't know the exact number of individuals that received the survey. But 80% of the respondents say it is important to have access to healthier foods at work. They also said that nutrition information influences their decisions, which it was good to hear, but we don't know if really when they stand in front of the machine if that's they're going to use that. But so to make sure that folks know what's in the food they're eating. And then messaging, again, should highlight choice. These are some of our main partners in the implementation. I'm going to go fast because I think I got my 5 minutes already. So within the Department of Health, our communications team, obviously the state agencies that are implementing the guidelines, healthcare authority that runs our worksite wellness program for state agencies, so they're key partner. Services for the blind, as Vic mentioned, and then Evergreen Vending, who's the local vendor in the county that most of our state agencies have offices in. So we created these. This is an overview of the implementation guide and resources that we have available for vending, just examples of the food items, product list, how to read a nutrition label. Vending companies, oftentimes they're salesmen, they don't know how to read a nutrition label. A planogram, like how things should be placed within a machine. And then materials, so the little carrot with a check mark, that is going to denote that an item is healthier in our vending machines and also in some of our other locations. Meetings and events, again, some of the same resources, menus and examples of meals, strategies, how to promote it, tips for choosing sodium options, and even a healthy potluck sign-up sheet because we found that people don't like to bring healthy foods to potlucks. We have an assessment tool for cafeterias. It really walks them through the guideline and helps them create a plan for how they will make the changes going forward. And more marketing materials. We have posters. We have little table tents to go in cafeterias. I gotta go fast. And then for institutions, some of the same items. This is what we tell agencies to do when it's their turn. Look at the guidelines. figure out which ones are applicable to your agency. At the Department of Health, only vending and meetings and events are applicable. We don't have a cafeteria. We don't have any custodial populations. So we wrote our policy just for those to complete. We have a checklist at agencies that helps them walk through this process. And we have free campaign resources that they can use. We sent them some printed materials, and then they can always go to our website and download additional ones. So it is a work in progress. We're in the middle of it. Some agencies are actually still developing their policies, and that was supposed to have happened by July 1st, but I'm working with them to do that. Our vending guidelines, they are kind of difficult to implement, so I'm working through that as well. I find that our sugar, we were pretty strict with sugar, and there aren't a lot of products that are out there, so we're kind of thinking about how we can approach that differently. The executive order doesn't have a lot of teeth to it, so there's no monitoring built into the executive order. There is a steering committee that we report to, but there's no funding attached to it either, so that makes it difficult, so we're trying to figure out how to do that. And our partners don't have a lot of funding. The funding really is within the Department of Health, and it's pieces and parts of different grants that are helping fund this work. A lot of it is the federal funding from CDC. And then, so really, that's it, leveraging those resources that we're receiving from our different CDC grants. And then we really think it's important to evaluate this work, and so we've tried to, again, looking at the different pieces and parts of our funding, making sure that we have evaluation built in, and we're partnering with the University of Washington Center for Public Health Nutrition to do this evaluation for us. So here is my contact information. That website also, which isn't, yeah, the website at the top, most of the implementation guide is there, the marketing materials, a lot of it is all there. You can email me. I actually will only be in my position for about a month more. I'm moving back down here to Louisiana. So I have Amy Ellings, who's our program manager, her contact information, and my position will be replaced, but that hasn't happened yet. So thank you, guys.